Welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night at the end of April. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, is Bill Proposky. And as we start, I'm getting a message on my cell phone from Northport, Florida. So that's probably not a robocall. Right, Coach?
No, I think you ought to take it.
Yeah, really.
That's who it is.
Yeah, I got a lot of people I know are Northport, Florida. Okay. It must be my Apple account. You know what it is? It's probably my Social Security number has been suspended.
Well, you want to call them and give me a number so they can straighten that right out.
Yeah, well, I want to give them my number and my Social Security number, which they have suspended. So, yeah, that will work. Man. All right, we got a lot coming up here tonight. A lot of news going on in local sports. The top story of the day is the Ipswich High School football coach has resigned after he went 6-0 this season with the Ipswich Tigers. They won the Kepan League outright. A tremendous season for Coach Kevin Fassett and his Tigers. But Coach Fassett has decided that he wants to work a little closer to home, wants to be closer to his family. He works in Malden, I believe. Excuse me, Melrose. And so he has resigned from Ipswich High School, and that's the Ipswich High School football team. And that's a loss, I think, for the Cape Ann League. I'm sorry to hear that, but he hopes to be working closer to home. And we can talk a little bit about that, Coach, as we go along. But also we'll be talking with Revere High School football coach Lou Ciccatelli, and you saw him over the weekend.
I did. I saw them Friday night at Manning Field against Lynn Classical. They looked very good first time out. We had a chat after the game, and that's up on the website. I basically attempt to Phil Stacey's excellent post-game interview, so I just sort of let him run with the questions, and I had a few moments after the interviews were over to talk to Coach, and he was very pleased with the first game, considering they only had a couple of weeks of practice, plus no scrimmages to work out some of the kinks. But they looked smooth. They looked like a veteran team, which they are, and I'm sure Coach was expecting something to that level of play. Talking to Brian Vaughn post game, and I'm talking to one of the coaches up in the booth. They lost a tremendous amount of seniors last year. They had a lot of new kids. They had freshmen playing. So their game was a bit more stunted, not as smooth, not as crisp. Some key penalties, some coverages not executed during the game, and Revere certainly took advantage of them.
All right. You also saw another over the weekend, the game, Beverly-Salem.
That was a mismatch of epic proportions, 41-47, nothing. Beverly had to try hard not to score. Coach was very pleased. He understood that Salem was undermanned, underexperienced, and his team put it together, and the coach is very high on the team coming back. He only has four seniors, so this is one where you take your lumps this year, but next year you should be doing some payback.
Yeah, my computer just went haywire and just lost everything here. I was looking at the standings and so on. And I'm going to have to try to work from memory now. I talked with Marblehead High School football coach Jim Rudloff earlier tonight. We'll have that post up tomorrow. And, of course, the big match, they have the game also with Swampscott. And Marblehead rather dominated in that game, winning rather easily. And Coach will have something to say about that, about his kids. Marblehead finishing at 7-0. Swampscott finishing at 3-1. Season for Winthrop High School. They finished 5-1 overall in the NEC South. But 3-0, they share the conference title with Swampscott in the NEC South. Linfield finished up 5-2, and congratulations to Pat LaMusta. He's the Kepan League Coach of the Year. And also, again, to congratulations to Kevin Fassett at Ipswich High School, only team to go unbeaten in the Kepan League. They finished at 6-0 as they managed to beat Linfield this year. And Coach Kevin Fassett resigning, hoping to work a little bit closer to home. He teaches, I believe it's at Melrose High School, but he's in the Melrose school system. So, fall two, all in all, Coach, I think a tremendous success.
Yeah, you certainly have to. You know, we talked about this numerous times already, Rick, that the coach did a great job of selling the need to the majority of kids to abide by the guidelines, abide by the restrictions, and if they wanted to get the season fit. Some teams, like Swampscott, had abbreviated seasons. Other teams played their entire seven-game schedule. Some didn't, simply because their opponents had their games canceled. But overall, I think that you know, you'd have to say it was a success, and I'm sure that league like the Greater Boston League that has a four-game schedule over the next 3 weeks, they'll finish up. But hoping that, you know, the communities will continue to see good numbers regarding the COVID, because the reason that they are playing this late four-game season is because their numbers were so high. They were red zone cities for a number of weeks, and that pushed back their ability to start football. And both Coach Ciccatelli and Coach Vaughn were extremely happy at least having the opportunity to play these four games.
Going to be a lot of names that we're looking at here in your local papers who are the league leaders who will be back next year. Certainly Cronin over at Marblehead, 5 touchdowns. He's only a sophomore. James Guy at St. John's Prep, I believe he's a senior, but he led the league in rushing with almost 1,000 yards. Robertson, I believe another underclassman at Marblehead, passing. Monahan from Hamilton Wenham, a senior receiving, but a tremendous season for them. And all in all, just kind of an amazing thing how they pulled this off in fall two. And yeah, we're going to check in with Greater Boston League here in just a second as we take our first break of the evening. And then as time permits, I want to talk, I have an interview with George Lavasser, who was the Danvers High School girls volleyball coach. And Coach, some of their statistics are not to be believed. They never went to a 5-set match this entire year. They lost 6 sets. That was it the entire year. And they went 15-0. And if I can find those stats, here it is right here. We're going to talk with Coach Lavasser. And again, I talked with him earlier about my computer's acting weird. But, Tim, you know, in an entire season, you're talking, you're going 15-0. You never went to 5 sets, and you won all of them. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, dominating is a word that sort of comes to mind.
Well, yeah, 76 consecutive wins in the Northeastern Conference for the Danvers girls. They have a 35-game winning streak because they did lose one in the playoffs last year. And just 6 consecutive Northeastern Conference regular season titles. And they dropped a total of 5 sets. I think I said 6. 5 sets this entire season with no match going more than 4. So we'll check in with Coach Lavasser coming up as well. But let's take a break and see if we can check in with Coach Lou Ciccatelli of the Revere High School Patriots as we continue here on the evening. This is North Sports Night, and we will be back if my computers cooperate.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
All right, we're back live with Tim Kearns of MSO and, of course, Revere football coach Lou Ciccatelli. And, Coach, I know that you and Tim got a lot to talk about here, but, man, congratulations. The first win in April has got to feel pretty good.
It feels really, really good. You know, boys worked hard, stuck together, played a very, very good Lynn Classical team. And you know, the biggest thing, you know, I talked to Tim about, and obviously the team was, great to get your first win and just great to be on the football field again. And that's exactly what Friday night was.
You know, Rick, that's great to get that first win in April, and that just sounds so strange. You know, it's supposed to be first win in September, isn't it?
It does feel strange. We were talking about, I was talking to Scotty Vlasic about it. Like, does this feel like football? You know, it really, I mean, you know, it's spring football, but it just, there was something different about it. But, you know, we'll take it. We'll take it.
Well, you know, Phil made the comment that the weather was just like the weather at the beginning of a regular football season in September. It was that kind of night.
Yeah, it was. It was. It wasn't bad. Manning can always be cold, too. The winds can really pick up there. But it wasn't too bad. You know, and it's actually going to be nice this week, too, again, as long as the rain holds off. So, you know, May's here. You know, it's not exactly fall, but we're getting there. The weather's getting warmer, so, you know, either way, we'll take what we can.
Luke Classical is a familiar opponent, but now they're in the GBL. Any difference in feeling against playing these guys, or how you were going to game plan against them, or how the game plan went?
Brian's still doing his thing, you know. Still running that spread offense. They want to run the football, and great coach, and just a great rivalry. Really nothing really changed. It was just, we were in just a different league, I guess, by on paper and whatnot, but it was still the rivalry that it was when we were in the NEC, I can tell you that.
You know, Coach, as you scored on your opening drive, and you moved the ball very smoothly. I was very impressed with that. And I thought about that after the game, and I'm thinking, you know, probably would have liked to score some more, but Classical was resistant, and they bogged it down a couple of times. But overall, for me, and I mentioned this Friday night, the smoothness of the execution of the team. You did a lot of things that you wanted to do. You ran the run-pass option. You dinked several passes over the line of scrimmage to a wide-open receiver who was then able to turn up the field for good yardage. And Classical really didn't have an answer for that. And I think that was really due to a lot of the kids that were on the field for Classical not having as much experience as your guys did. And that has to make you feel good during this four-game season, that you've got such a experienced team to go through this experience in.
Yeah, we're very, very fortunate. You know, we lost some big, big, big time players last year, obviously, but we still have a lot left. We had seven or eight starters on both sides of the ball coming back. So, they worked hard, believe it or not, during the off season at their own gyms and stuff like that. Because we're really big on the weight room with the kids, like I know most programs are. And they got after it. They got after Friday night, and we were able to do a lot of different things when you can run the football. Somewhat effectively at all. I mean, football 101, it opens up the pass game, the RPOs were on, and it also helps that I've got a quarterback that's his fourth year starter. He played for me as a freshman, and Calvin Boudreaux was just putting the ball where it had to be. Just about, he was 11 for 15 or 11 for 14 with 186 yards, and he was very, very accurate throwing, and he was very, very fluent, if you will, moving through the pocket. He was stepping up, and the offensive line a couple of times broke down, and he was able to find receivers that got open. So it was smooth. I mean, you know, there were a couple of times, one drive we were in the red zone around a 60-yard drive, and then we went backwards on a couple of our holding calls, and we didn't score. So, you know, a little sloppy but at times. But, again, that, you know, first game jitters, and I think especially, I know Coach Vaughn had said this too, when you don't scrimmage,
right,
usually that's how you get those little mistakes out of the way. And, you know, we didn't have that. No one had it in the GBL. So, All in all, I was quite pleased on both sides of the ball.
Lou, when your QB does so good, it's got to indicate that something up front is going on well. Tell me about a couple of kids you may have watched on film here up front. On the film that you might not have noticed on game night, who did well for you guys? Because too often the line, the guards, the tackles, man, they don't get a lot of ink.
No, they don't. They don't. And these guys have been together for a while. Dominic Reed, my left offensive tackle, and my left guard, Joseph Martinez. This is their second year starting varsity football, and they did a great job. They did a great job. We do a lot of pin and pull stuff, with the pass blocking, and these guys got it down. They all played together last year, and we've got a young center in there that I thought, for his first game this year, did a wonderful, wonderful job, pass blocking and run blocking. And of course, my veterans, Ala Tui, my right guard, and Ryan Doucette, my captain. They all came together, and they gave Calvin a good, or at least enough time to find the open receivers.
You know, there was one play that I thought epitomized the night. Boudreau was almost tackled in the backfield. He made his pull out of the tackle, scrambled to his right a little bit, and then just dumped the ball about 5 yards down to a receiver who came back into the open area. And I'm thinking, yep, you know what's your night when you make those kind of plays.
Tim, Tim, that was a middle screen. What are you talking about? But you know what? That was a middle screen. You know what? No, I'm up. It looked like it. He did it twice. That's my senior running back, Teo Edetebi. He had a great night too. He had over 90 yards rushing the football and a touchdown. But yeah, he's a smart kid. Real smart kid. Honor roll student. And Calvin's a playmaker. So when you check down and you got really nowhere to go, and Edetebi is trying to get in an open space, and we did it twice, and it, one of them ended up in a big play, ended up keeping our scoring drive going. So yeah, when things work out, sometimes you know what, you need that, and sometimes it helps you.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't ask questions; you just say, "Okay, nice play."
Yeah, that's what I said.
Go ahead. That goes back to experience. It goes back to maturity. It goes back to being in the moment, being aware. Oh, my quarterback's in trouble. I got to find a spot. And made it work. Boudreau was able to escape. And he's going to only got to escape. He's going to get his head downfield to see who might be available.
Yeah, no doubt. And he's, like I said, he's a four-year player. He started actually his freshman year as a against the Winthrop, and we put him in that game, and we watched him, and we loved his poise. And it's funny. There was one time when Calvin—I don't know if I said this—but I used to look down on Calvin because I was taller than him. Now Calvin's like 6'2".
Okay, Lou.
I'm not the tallest guy. He grew. He got big. He's your typical quarterback. He's got a very strong arm, and he's smart. He's definitely a student of the game. So,
Lou, go ahead, Tim.
No, you made me lose my train of thought by jumping on. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you've got one game under your belt with COVID training, a couple of weeks of practice here, and what's the focus going to be this week? Are you guys sort of into a routine now, Lou? Because this is anything but routine in terms of where you are with football ordinarily, but are you guys sort of in a rhythm?
We are. We definitely are. Like, if for instance, today we got in the weight room before practice. It's always good to get in the weight room on Monday. I try to get the kids in there twice a week. And so we were able to get in the weight room today, and you got to be crafty these days with the COVID, so you have to go in two groups. But we got it done, and then we ended up having a defensive practice. Showing the kids formations and obviously what English does, and had a good run. So we're definitely in a routine, and the kids are definitely focused. And, even though it's a four-game season, these kids really, really want to go 4-0, and they really, we're not looking past English by no means, because they're very, very good. We saw them on film, and they hung right in there with Everett till the very end. So we would definitely have our hands full, but it would be nice to get a win, Friday night, and it would be nice to have a little showdown with an old GBL foe, you know, Everett, in the coming weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Is that English game a home game or away, Lou?
The English game, it's home. It's our homecoming, senior night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
how is Stavoni feeling?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, so big loss. Marco broke his leg. He did break his femur. Really a freak. Hard bone to break, and just a freak. He fell on it the wrong way, and all the weight from the tackle came down on it. Anyways, he's doing okay. He had successful surgery, thank God. You know, and he's actually walking on it already.
Really?
You know, they get you right in and out of there. Yeah. And, which is a good thing, and hopefully he'll be out of the hospital sometime today. That's what I understand.
Yeah, I know it wasn't good when he rolled over and he was grabbing just above his knee, and I'm watching and I'm thinking, this isn't good, this is a leg injury. And then when he got up and he couldn't put any weight on it, I turned to the classical coach and I said, I think he broke his leg.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I was shocked. That's a hard bone to break.
He had three guys jump on top of him, so.
He did. It was pretty tough to take because he's a good player on both sides of the ball. He's definitely in our plan this year, on offense and defense. He's my safety. So he'll be greatly missed. It's tough because he's a senior, but you know what? He's a strong kid. You already talked about he can't wait to get back to the practice field and be with the guys. So hopefully,
please let him know that they asked about him and wish him a speedy recovery.
Oh, I certainly will. That means a lot, Tim. I certainly will. Thank you.
Well, Coach, great start, and it's just really strange. But it's great talking with you again, and great success, man. Nice start. And your game, is it Friday night at home?
Yeah, so Friday night at home, 6 o'clock start at Harry Delarusso.
Excellent. Tim, any final thought?
I don't know where I'm going to be, but I may end up in Revere. I'm not quite sure what the schedule looks like. I don't know what English is doing, but... I like following Revere.
Of course you do.
Of course we do. Hey, we have for a long time, Lou. It's been a long time, brother.
I know it has. So, and it's always a pleasure with you.
I appreciate it. And, again, Coach, under these conditions, it's very exceptional and very special. Congratulations on not only the win, but also on taking care of these young men.
Much appreciated, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Coach. Good luck this week. All right, that's
Lou
Ciccatelli, who is the Revere High School coach of the Revere Patriots. They got a beautiful stadium too, Tim, and it's over the years you taught me it's pretty easy to get to.
Yes, it is. Remember when it was I think Bill and I were there, but I think you were there. The mud pool.
Oh, it was a mud pool. Yeah, of course.
Between the 30-yard line.
Yeah. Oh yeah, many games. But I will say this: one thing about Lou's teams is that all those years we were doing this, and we were following primarily the Northeastern Conference at that time, and now, thank goodness, we've expanded. But, Revere, with Lou, man, they were as tough as any team in the NEC. And you know, like losing Classical and English, I'm sad to see them go on the one hand. But on the other hand, they're still competitive, and they're in the GBL. But Revere has always played that tough football, sort of like Gloucester and Winthrop. All the kids play tough football. What am I saying? But you know what I'm trying to say with Winthrop, Revere kids.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of times smaller communities. They got a lot to prove. You know, there's a lot of pride. They don't necessarily have the most talent or the best talent, but. They come to play. And when you come to play, Brady Gill used to tell us on Sunday mornings, give me nine guys who know how to play the game and want to play the game, and I'll beat anybody. And that's the way you got to look at it. We're nine guys that want to beat your butt.
I saw,
you can go out there and do it.
I saw something funny. I can't remember if I can find it here. Hamilton won them, lost a very close game. I believe it was to Ipswich, okay? And Ipswich finished off a perfect season, and I believe Ipswich won it late in the game. And Jim Pugh said something like, oh, man, if we had only been able to run out the clock. I think they got intercepted late in the game. And it reminded me of, you remember Paul Bear Bryant? You've heard of him.
Yeah.
Okay. Legendary Alabama coach. And when Darryl Royal was coaching Texas against Alabama, Darryl Royal, who's also another legendary coach, used to say about Paul Bear Bryant, well, he can take his'n and beat your'n, or he can take your'n and beat his'n, meaning he could just coach on either team and beat you. But the other thing Paul Bear Bryant used to say, like Coach Pugh just mentioned, was, we didn't lose a lot of games, but we ran out of time once in a while.
Well, you know, that's the way you look at it. And boy, if we had one more minute.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love it. All right, so I think we need to take a break, and I'm going to have to attach George Lavasser, I believe, later on in the program. He is recorded. And, again, I want you to listen to what he has to say about Danvers High School girls volleyball, because they're just a machine, sort of like in the mold of UConn women's basketball. So we will play that at some point. Either we'll attach it at the end of the show, or we'll put it in the next half hour. Excuse me here. But let me see here. We will need to take a break. Then we're going to talk some golf with Gary Larrabee and other stuff. And then we'll check in with Mike Grenier about the Celtics. And I am not optimistic about that conversation, not because of Mike, but because of the Celtics. So we'll take a break as I turn it over here. This is MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Don't forget, tomorrow, Bill Newell will be hosting the Salem News Sports Writers. That'll be coming up here about 8 o'clock in the morning, so stay tuned for that. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Great to bring back Gary Larrabee now as spring is in full bloom. As you take a look outside, it's amazing what's going on out there, and that means I guess the golf season locally will be picking up, but Gary, welcome back.
Great to be with you as always, Rick.
Oh, man, that makes me feel so good. So what's going on, Gary? Where do we start?
I think we have to start with a topic that Tim and I love to go back and forth on. That's the power of international golf. It was never more never more profound and never more significant than this past weekend. Down in New Orleans, Tim.
As I was watching the last few holes of that, I was thinking of you, and I'm thinking, thank God there's a guy named Smith in the final four. Any of those names.
Very perceptive of you, Tim. Anyways, we had the only two-man team formatted competition on the PGA Tour at the New Orleans Tour stop this past weekend, the Zurich Classic, and just to typify how international the PGA Tour has become, not just the LPGA Tour, but the PGA Tour as well, we had two Aussies, Cam Smith and Mark Leishman, beat a couple of South Africans, both of them former major championship winners, Charles Schwartzel and Louis Westhuizen.
You hear them speaking South African?
It's usually just they speak English, don't they, Tim?
I don't know. It didn't sound like English. It sounded like they were talking Africana or Boer. I was like, what are they talking? I didn't understand it. It's when they were on one of the greens and they were looking at a putt. And I could have sworn the shorter guy, that Ustazen, I couldn't let him go, I don't understand a word he's saying. Unless the accent was just so thick, I couldn't make it up. I thought he was talking another language.
Well, that's something for us to look into down the road. Maybe we can all pick up another foreign language or two and become that much more versed as speakers of more than one language in the world. But, Tim, I just thought that was a fascinating evolution of this tournament over the weekend with the Aussies beating the South Africans in America.
That was a really fun format. And I'm surprised that the PGA doesn't, you know, throw those out there more often just for crowd appeal.
And there were a lot of good players in the field, some big names, a lot of players from the top 25. But a sub story from this tournament is the fact that our North Shore representative on the PGA Tour, Rob Oppenheim, born in Salem and brought up in Andover, teamed with Grayson Murray from Raleigh, North Carolina, a name I've never heard of before on the PGA Tour. And they finished tied for 25th at 11 under par, 9 shots off the winning score, but still a pretty good showing and a pretty good paycheck for those two guys this week, with Rob now moving back to the individual format that's coming with at the Valspar Classic in Florida, and Rob will be in that one as well, and hopefully he'll have as good a tournament, if not better, playing individually. They were tied for ninth after two rounds. They slipped a little bit the third and fourth rounds, but did you notice, Tim, the Massachusetts flavor in the finish?
Yeah, you know, I did not look at unfortunately, I did not get to the final card, but it is good to hear that the contingent is beginning to show, because, you know, it's either overseas showing up or a lot of guys from South and the West that dominate the table. When we'll see the final scores.
Right. What happened yesterday was Richie Wawenski from Holyoke and Peter Uihlein from New Bedford shot the low final round score of 67 and finished solo third. While Keegan Bradley, who, you know, played high school golf at Hopkinton, he finished fourth with Brendan Steele. So overall, a pretty good week for Bay State players in New Orleans. Let me move along. Just one other observation from the tours. Nice to see a Canadian, Brooke Henderson, win the LPGA tournament in LA at the Wiltshire Country Club, one of those country clubs where the movie stars like to play golf. Another international flavor to the golf action over the weekend, Tim.
Well, but in a sense, local at the same time. You know, we can't claim her as our own, but certainly it keeps the local flavor alive when a Canadian or even someone from Mexico wins on a world tour.
Yes, and it's a real fluke, but it's not an Asian. But we didn't have an Asian winner this week on the LPGA Tour, and good to see that. We do have some local golf we should talk about briefly, too, guys.
Mm-hmm.
They're having the 312-player field competing in Port St. Lucie, Florida, in the National Professional Championship, which is really the Club Pro Championship for all the club pros in America. And after two rounds at the four-round event, after two rounds, Kirk Hannafeld, the former golf director and director of instruction at Salem Country Club, recovering from a very serious back issue last fall, made the 36-hole cut with a 145 total. And good to see that from Kirk. Unfortunately, Scott Johnson from Peabody and Oakley Country Club and George Goich, the former club pro at Turner Hill did not make the cut. There's another cut tomorrow after the 54 holes are played, and that's for the low 60. The fact that Hinnefeld turns 65 next month.
Oh, my, okay.
He's competing against club pros who are anywhere from 20 to 60. And there are a few other old-timers in the field, but the fact he's in there breaking that first cut, another great, great victory for the old-timers in the field.
Good for our generation, man. Glad to hear it.
Enduring, and good to see that Hinnefeld's obviously recovered from a winter full of rehab for his back condition, and is obviously holding up so far after two rounds down in Port St. Lucie, where Hinnefeld has his home.
Have you played down there? Have you been down into Port St. Lucie?
I have not, but I know it's a beautiful part of Florida.
Yeah, it is.
That was the hometown, retirement hometown for an all-time great Mickey Wright, who just died last year.
Right.
So Port St. Lucie is big time on golf. That's what PGA Golf Club is, where they're having this tournament. And let's hope that Kirk can keep it going these next 2 days.
Yeah, that's cool.
Gary, I was just going through the ESPN golf page, and I came upon this story. PGA Tour bonus program will pay players based on impact metrics rather than performance. And the PGA Tour has set aside $40 million to pay bonuses to players who moved, quote-unquote, moved the needle, rather based on, not based on how they play, but rather how they engage with sponsors and fans.
Well, I haven't read too much about it, but I'm aware a little bit about it. And it's another way for the rich to get richer, but maybe some of those young guys out there, or the guys who are not so successful like Rob Oppenheim, can get a little chunk of that dough through this program. Very interesting, to say the least, Tim.
Hey, Gary, I loved your article on Tom Sala. Excuse me, Tim.
They mentioned Woods, Fowler, DeChambeau, Mickelson, and Spieth, you know, being among those that could benefit. But it was in reaction to a rival attempt to set up a new circuit known as the Premier Golf League.
I don't think that will happen, but now look what happened last week. They tried to start up a new Super Soccer League. That didn't go too well, huh?
Three days.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you for mentioning.
Well, I just want to mention that. It was a great article.
Marsala.
You tipped us off. You gave us the exclusive, really, a couple of weeks ago. And then it was a very exclusive, intensive article, very, very well fleshed out and so on. And it was great to read. And then you also had another column on Friday in the Salem News. So what's coming up this week?
Nothing this week. I'm going pretty much every 10 days or every 2 weeks with my North Shore golf columns in the Salem News and Gloucester Times sometimes, the New Report Daily News. But I'll be looking back a little bit of North Shore golf history with the next column. And
okay.
Well, we're going to have a lot of golf to follow here. And we should also make one last mention of Stephen Delisio finishing up his final year at Duke. He did not have a great weekend. He shot 152 at the Atlantic Coast Conference Championship in Milton, Georgia, and I think that's pretty much going to be the end of his golf career at Duke, because Duke's not going to compete in the NCAA tournament. They're not good enough this year. We should also mention Chris Francoeur, though, from Amesbury, St. John's prepster like Delisio. Finishing up a four-year career at URI, he won a tournament shooting a 7-under-65 in Hamilton, New York, over the weekend. He's had a great spring, and he'll be playing one more season, a graduate season, they're calling it, because of the pandemic, at the University of Louisville. So good going for those two guys.
Excellent. You know, Gary, I would like to pass along my kudos to the piece on. On Josh, as Rick said, it was great reading, and it was I think a tremendous tribute, and I'm sure Josh and his family were really grateful for the time and effort that you put in to talk about Josh and to explain the experience that he had, because a lot of people said, oh, well, he's given it up, it couldn't have been that good, but from the reading of it, he enjoyed it to the fullest and has no regrets about going over there or deciding to hang it up at this time.
I'm just surprised he didn't bring back a bride from Thailand or Indonesia or Malaysia. I mean, beautiful. The women are beautiful over there, as you guys know.
Oh, man.
Study that stuff. But no, Josh is single. He's done a good job with Toast. And he'll be getting regaining his amateur status, I hope, through the USGA between now and next spring. And he'll have a chance to qualify for the U.S. Open, which is being held next June, not this June, but next June, at the Country Club down in Brookline.
Great stuff, Gary. Man, great stuff. Thank you so much. What is this? First week in May coming up next week. So we'll see you on Monday.
Look forward to it, guys.
Thank you, Gary. Be well. Be safe.
Stay well. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian. And just when you think you're done, man, he comes up with all this other stuff, Tim. It's like, damn, it's like a machine gun, all the stuff he knows.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
He's got a couple of years on us, you know. So.
Well, maybe on you, not on me. But, yeah, he's got the experience. I'm about the same age as he is. You're just a kid compared to us, man. So.
Okay.
Watch and learn. Hey, listen, you could be back here in studio pretty soon, right?
Yeah.
All right, good. Then I can blame you for all my mistakes. Well, I do anyway.
That's right. No, in the room.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back with Mike Grenier, another sports writer. Going to talk a little bit about the Celtics and other stuff, so stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Come on. Hello, testing, 1, 2. All right, we're back live, I think. You guys hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Tim?
Yeah, there are days, son.
All right. So, I'm just saying, Mike, Tim, I got to get Tim back in studio here where I can blame him for all my mistakes. So,
yeah, you know, I think that's a heck of an idea.
So,
especially since the vaccination now.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I try.
A heck of an idea.
All right.
Sometimes we pick on Rick, and sometimes we pick on Tim.
No, we always pick on Tim. So,
no, yeah. It's always pick on Tim.
You can pick on Mike as change of pace.
Oh, well, we could try that, but yeah. Mike, too much respect for you, man. Mike, longtime sports writer in the area, and primarily a basketball analyst. And Mike, I'm going to start this conversation, and you and Tim can take it over, but. A couple of observations from my viewpoint on the Celtics. Number one, I'm afraid Stevens has lost the room. And number two, Jason Tatum a couple of weeks ago when he had that 53.9, talked about his points first and the win second, and I brushed that off. But then he had a triple-double, and he talked about that first and again, the win second. And now I'm a little concerned. So that's where I want to start.
Well, you know, that's a good place to start, Rick, because as we watched yesterday's game against a depleted Charlotte Hornets team, you're missing two starters, basically, okay?
Mm-hmm.
LaMelo Ball, the rookie who's been having a great year, and, of course, Gordon Hayward. Now, the Celtics were back at full strength except for Robert Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And they played with such a lack of flair, energy, motivation, against the team they should have beaten yesterday. And I'll tell you where the game was lost. When it was 10-5, and Kemba Walker took the ball out to Jason Tatum, and Jason Tatum made, I think, and I'm 71 years old, one of the laziest passes I've ever seen in my life, where he just underhand soft toss, like you, something you'd throw to your six-year-old son when you're playing wiffle ball, you know? A little underhand soft toss that Rozier was at midcourt going back on defense. He says, well, this is a golden opportunity. He kind of, he just took a few running steps, easily intercepted the weak, feeble pass by Tatum and dunked it. Mm-hmm. All five, and it caused Brad Stevens to take a timeout. I turned to my wife, Eileen, my wife of 49 years who has had to put up with all this stuff. And I said to her, that's it. They're done. And they were.
Wow.
12 to 5, they were done because there was a complete lack of commitment and motivation. Tim, did you see that particular play? Because to me, it set the tone for the way they played the rest, the other 46 minutes, you know?
You know, I turned them on, and it takes me like one or two trips down the floor to go, nah, really don't want to watch.
Not
this.
Tonight, yep.
I am so disengaged from the Celtics because of, and it's sad because I used to be such a big fan, but because of the just lack of total commitment. You know, I was watching the show on the 86 Celtics last night, which they have amended and added on a new ending where they talk about the passing of Len Bias, Red Auerbach,
Reggie Lewis, probably.
Reggie Lewis, and they talked about the impact of losing those two players and what that meant in a transition to a whole new era of Celtics basketball where the old guys could retire and the new guys could take over, and there just wasn't that segue to happen, and so they got buried for, you know, those 20 years.
That's right. They did. And Rick, you made a great point, and I agree with you totally, Tim, on that. But Rick, you make a great point about Jason Tatum, and he followed up that 53-point game with a tremendous 44-point game. Well, he was motivated that night. He's facing Stephon Curry.
Yep, that's right.
That was a great win. We're talking a little over a week ago on a Saturday night national televised game where the Celtics were very motivated, and that won their sixth in a row at that point. But it's been downhill ever since. And, you know, if I had to draw a contrast comparison right now with a team that is motivated, that would be the New York Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
New York Knicks, a team that they haven't won nine games in a row in 25 years, okay? And they did that the other night. They won their ninth in a row. You look at their roster talent. It doesn't even begin to compare to the roster talent of the Celtics, okay? Basically, they have two guys that are, like, really good players. Not even close to remotely all-stars, though. One is Julius Randle, the center, who's having a great year. And the other one would be R.J. Barrett, who came out of Duke a couple of years ago and has been a very good player. Other than that, they're just a bunch of, they plug him in. Tom Thibodeau, the head coach out of Salem State College, of course, who I know very well, he plugs in role players, and they've won nine in a row, and they're two games ahead of the Celtics in the standings. And it's amazing what he's been able to do with that team, Thibodeau, as opposed to what Stevens is doing with this talent he has with the Celtics.
You know, and that's a great point. And Coach Thibodeau, we know all of his successes going back to Salem State. You know, team is the word. We talked about team last year with the Celtics and the year before, and it was very encouraging. I don't see that now. And, you know, I'm afraid that that Stevens has lost the room. And the other thing, Tim and Mike, that came to my mind was that I remember when Marcus Smart was being trashed by the media a few years ago when he first came into the league. And right now I look at him, and maybe I'm looking at with him jaundiced eyes, but I'm looking at Marcus Smart and saying, okay, that's a team player. That's a Celtic. Where's everybody else?
Well, I agree. Remember last year during the playoffs, he's the one that spoke up because he was so frustrated at a couple of losses they suffered. And a couple of players, you know, a couple of his teammates were upset with him for being so emotional and calling people out. Well, you know, he's still willing to call people out, and no one's going along with him in terms of, like, committing to the team. So I agree with you completely, 1,000% on that one. And, you know, right now they're in a very insecure position in the Eastern Conference because
they're basically tied, well, it's tied for sixth, but, you know, basically the Miami Heat are right there with them. And then after that, you know, the Hornets, who are shorthanded, are only a game and a half in that eighth spot. So the Celtics can wind up in that dreaded, with that new format this year in the playoffs, the play-in game, where if they finish seventh in the East, which is a distinct possibility, they would have to play, like, perhaps the Washington Wizards, who have won eight straight and who are going crazy with Bradley Beal, the leading scorer in the NBA, and Russell Westbrook, who's averaging a triple-double virtually every game, in a one-game playoff.
Mm-hmm.
They could actually, could you imagine, they would obviously would be held at the Boston Garden because they will have a better record. But if they played the Washington Wizards right now and lost that one game, they'd be out of the playoffs.
Yep.
That's it. You wouldn't have to worry about them playing the Bucks and the Brooklyn Nets and you know, the Philadelphia 76ers because they'd be out in a one-game playoff. So they want to avoid that seventh or eighth spot where they'd be in a play-in game. But the way it's trending right now, they could wind up seventh or eighth because they're just not... They just don't have it together. And, you know, we could, I know certain people are going to use, you know, absences as an excuse, meaning Robert Williams has been out for six straight games. Evan Fournier missed, like, about 9 or 10 games in a row with the COVID protocol.
Well, half the league is taking the night off every night.
Of course, of course. Now, tomorrow night, they're playing OKC, and Tatum's already been declared out with an ankle problem. And Kemba's been declared out because he suffered a little strain in his side last night. So you got two starters missing. But OKC, record-wise, has one of the worst teams in the NBA. So, you know, on paper, Celtics should beat them. But you mentioned the lack of teamwork, Rick. And it's not only a lack of teamwork. To me, it's the team that goes out there is playing with no zero energy or cohesiveness. So it's more than lack of team. The lack of teamwork extends to, you know, the guys that are available are not playing together either. So, you know, it's a multifaceted problem, and you make a good point about is Brad Stevens losing the room? It certainly appears to be that way at this point, and I think Danny Ainge will have to address that major issue in the offseason. Right now, I personally don't see him coming back this year, Brad.
Oh, boy.
You know, they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals, and, you know, three or four times, and he couldn't quite get over the hump. Maybe it was because of lack of, you know, they didn't have enough talent to reach the NBA Finals. But now they've taken a big step backwards. Mm-hmm. So Ainge is going to have to figure out, well, is this an anomaly? Is this something abnormal? Is that it would happen anyway because of the injuries and the COVID protocols and all that? Or is this team tuning out Brad Stevens? That's what he's going to have to decide. But Ainge also needs to accept some of the blame for not supplementing the core talent the Celtics have with some good bench players. I mean, that bench is weak. Romeo Langford, who Ainge really loves for some reason, is shooting 29% from the floor. Granted, it's small sample size, but he's shooting 29% overall from the floor. Grant Williams is a 52% free throw shooter. The list goes on and on of guys who are not, can't do the job. I mean, the first round draft pick, Aaron Nesmith, barely plays because he hasn't shown enough savoir faire to earn playing time from the head coach. So, you know, there's a lot of problems right now that are just, you know, you can't gloss them over anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to figure out, again, the level of inconsistency, and, you know, all the players you mentioned aren't guys that are going to solve the problem. Fournier is out, but do we realistically see him as somebody who's going to make a big difference when he comes back?
Right.
Well, that's what gets me about some of these guys that are out. They aren't the key players. They're just role players. And they'll continue to be role players who get small minutes and make small contributions. And I was saying to Rick before we joined you, my Franny Gill, who was my baseball mentor growing up in Lynn, used to tell us all the time, give me 9 guys that want to play, and I'll win. And and talked about the Knicks. That's who they are. They're 12, 15 guys who want to win. So they're going out. And they're winning, and they're surprising people because they're committing to win. The Washington doing the same thing. They got 15 guys who go, let's go win.
Okay. So they've got that winning streak. The Celtics, well, let's play tonight. We're on TV. Okay. Oh, we're playing Steph Curry. Okay, let's play tonight. And then you lose to the, you know, sisters of the poor. That's ridiculous. Those are the teams you should be shellacking.
That's right. So going into yesterday's game, you would have thought the Celtics, because they had regained Kemba Walker, and they had regained, you know, Jaylen Brown, who'd been out for, against Charlotte on paper, you thought, okay, this is a 10 to 20 point win. But it was just the opposite. And it's amazing. I watched the Knicks on Saturday, Tim and Rick, and it's amazing how hard they hustle and how hard they play because they're so starved for wins.
Yep, that's all you want to see. Yep.
The fan base and the team itself.
Yep.
And right now they got a guy that's kicking their butt, Tom Thibodeau, and they bought into whatever he's trying, offensively and defensively, and they're winning with guys that they didn't used to win with. It's pretty much the same roster they had the last couple of years. The last couple of years they compiled the record of 38-110. 38-110.
Whoa.
Very poor record. Thibodeau comes in there and turns that team around. It's not like they have any phenomenal rookies. Some of the guys they've drafted the last three or four years still don't play much. But the guys who can play, R.J. Barrett, Julius Randle, Derrick Rose, who of course was a great player with the Bulls when Thibodeau was, and then he got injured, had a couple of very bad ACL injuries. He's playing his tail off the bench. He's playing the role that the Celtics thought Fournier would play, giving the team 17, 18, 19, 22 points a game off the bench. Derrick Rose, and he's in his 30s now. So these guys are doing something right. They want to win. Madison Square Garden, like any other place, is not filled right now. You only get 3,000 or 4,000 fans. But they're making their voices heard because they're finally seeing some hope. And they're playing much harder. It's very obvious when if you could split your TV screen and watch the Knicks at the same time as the Celtics, you'd notice how much harder the New York Knicks play.
The energy, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike, we got a couple of minutes here left.
Sure.
Tell me about our locals in the NBA. Maybe start with Pat Connaughton.
Connaughton gave him 11 points and 6 rebounds. The Bucks. He did that for two games in a row, 11.67 rebounds off the bench, 23-24 minutes. Michael Carter-Williams, Hamilton, injured again right now. He's in his eighth season, been plagued with injuries the last few years with the Orlando Magic. Right now, he's sitting out indefinitely with an ankle injury. And, you know, I got to mention Scoony Penn, who is an assistant coach, obviously the phenomenal Salem High athlete, won the state title in 1995, went on to Ohio State, was an All-American there, played in Europe. Now he's in his second year as assistant coach with the Memphis Grizzlies, and they're a little bit like the Knicks, guys. They're going to make the playoffs in the Western Conference after being a hopeless team the last few years, and they're a couple games over 500. And I've talked to Scoony a few times, texted him. He's having a blast with this Memphis Grizzlies team. And, you know, they're doing a great job. They have, you know, obviously last year's Rookie of the Year, Ja Morant. But they have a lot, it's similar to the Knicks. They have a lot of role players. And they're playing maybe over their heads. They're two or three games over 500. They're definitely going to the playoffs.
All right, Tim.
You know, Mike, are you playing over your head or are you playing to your talent? You know,
that's a good point. Yeah.
It seems credit because, you know, Rick likes to say, oh, they're all professional basketball players.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to make a star, but these are guys with talent. They had to make the team.
Yeah.
You know, so they're out there doing what's expected of them by their coaching, by their ownership, by their fans.
Yeah, and the teams that give the extra effort are the ones that are going to wind up with a few games over 500 when they maybe weren't anticipated to do that well. And that's been the case with both the Knicks and the Memphis Grizzlies. So the Celtics have a long way to go to catch those teams in terms of commitment and energy and wanting to win. The Celtics, I swear, they have 11 games left, and they're playing as if they have all kinds of time to regain their mojo. And that's not the case.
I think they're too interested in personal stats. That's what I'm beginning to believe, and I'm very disappointed in that.
We'll find out soon enough because playoffs are going to be with us in about a month.
All right. Mike, before I let you go, what do you anticipate the Patriots doing this week?
Well, what I hope and what I think is might be two different things. What I hope is that one way or another, whether they draft a guy or package some draft picks to get an established quarterback, I don't care which way they do it. But I'm hoping they get a quarterback. But, you know, as we know, Belichick is the king of mystery when it comes to the draft and the king of surprises. I have a feeling rather than trade down like he's normal, like he's done a lot in his career, he might trade up this year if he gets a shot at one of those top four or five quarterbacks. I'm hoping, bottom line, that by the end of the week, that they have a quarterback who will give them some hope in terms of, because they have acquired so many great players, both on offense and defense here in the offseason. They committed a lot of money to these guys, so you want to have a quarterback who puts them in position to win. So I'm hoping that's what they come away with. Other than that, I don't know. I mean, there's about 4,000 million mock drafts out there.
yeah.
Right, guys? And I don't have one. I think, I texted somebody today, said that there are more NFL mock drafts than there are vaccinations in the U.S. right now. You know?
All right.
You know, I'm like, I'm afraid that, you know, Ben Bolin threw it out there that, maybe, you know, he takes a defensive player at 15 and then goes and gets one of those second-tier quarterbacks. I really don't want a second-tier quarterback.
No, I know. But the first-tier quarterbacks are very hard to come by, Tim. The guys that have been in the league 7 or 8 years. And people were talking Garoppolo, but is he really available? Probably not. You know, you'd want somebody like that to lead the Patriots because he's accustomed to the Patriots system. But I just think they're still in a bind when it comes to the quarterback position, which, as everyone knows, is the key position.
All right, well, we'll know the story next time we get together.
That's right. And, you know, I think the first round of the draft will only take about 2.5 days, you know?
That's right.
And we should know.
That's right. Right. All right, Mike, we'll talk to you later. I'm going to finish this thing up with Tim. We'll see you next Monday.
All right, you take care. Thanks, guys, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Tim, you want to finish up your thoughts on that? Because I don't know what to expect, man. I have no idea.
Well, I always thought the plan was to get Garoppolo back after several seasons. Let him go to San Francisco, you know, get the playing time. He wasn't get under Brady. And, now the opportunity. It looks like the Niners are going to draft a quarterback, you know, at three. So, you know, Garoppolo is going to be gone. They're going to be looking for something. Pats have stuff to trade. Get Garoppolo. You get an experienced NFL quarterback, one who knows the system. You know, not everybody, you know, wants him, but he's the best fit.
Okay.
He's the best fit.
All right. Well.
Right away.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I hope it works. I'm a little worried about his injury. Situation, his injury history, but he's capable, no question. We'll see. Tim, any final thoughts? Red Sox, they're sort of bobbling around at 500 now since they went on that winning streak.
They need to go out on the road to stay there. They can't win at home.
Yeah, right. You're right. They need to go out on the road, and they will. So we'll see what happens. Coach, great talking with you. We got to talk about getting back in the studio either next week or the week after.
Yeah, we'll discuss that along with other remunerations.
Oh, man, you drive a hard bargain, dude.
Hey, like my comment on that, remunerations? Is that like renumbering the highway?
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. All right, we'll get into that. Tim, thank you so much, man. Stay safe, all right?
All right, you too, buddy.
All right, good night, Coach. Thank you.
Yeah, bye.
All right, that's Tim Kearns, who is our MSO analyst extraordinaire, and he's also our goodwill spokesman. All right, we're going to attach the video, the audio to George Lavasser, who is a Danvers High School girls volleyball coach here. Tremendous season, successful season again this year. And that'll do it otherwise for us here at MSO News Sports. You can contact us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Please do, if you have any suggestions, comments, complaints, or whatever. On behalf of Tim Kearns, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell. Don't forget, we've got Bill Newell hosting the Salem News Sports Writers tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. I'm Rick Moore. This is North Shore Sports Night. Thank you. All right, with MSO News Sports, it's been a long time, but happy to bring back now the Danvers High School volleyball coach, George Lavasser. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO, and congratulations on another spectacular season.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rick.
Well, let's get started here. I ask all the coaches in this Fall 2 thing how things differed preseason-wise, keeping in touch with your kids from fall to now, and then maybe what it was like when you finally got together.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, COVID was tough to navigate. Thankfully, we have we had a great group of kids and a great group of parents that were super communicative about anything happening in their lives in terms of close contacts or anything like that. And we have a strong administration in Danvers, so we were allowed to practice during the original Fall 1 season. So we've been going 3 days a week since September. We took a break over the winter season. We were happy to be back in the gym for the start of Fall 2.
When you look at these guys, these kids that you have, these ladies, I should say, you probably were expecting good things because you had a good core of seniors, but what were you expecting after working with these kids all along and seeing what they could do? And last year, going what 20-0 or plus playoff wins?
Yeah, so we finished 25-1 last season. We only graduated two seniors, so we definitely knew for the most part what we were bringing back. Without having a state tournament this year, and originally not having a league title, which we ended up, the athletic directors came together and approved that, which was great for the girls at the end of the season. But this season for us was definitely, we get to play, and that's, at the end of the day, that's what it was about. We got the seniors on the floor, we got a little bit of time to get ready for the next fall season. We obviously, strive one game at a time to be as great as we can be, but this season was definitely just about being back on the floor and being back in our gym.
What was the biggest challenge for you guys, Coach? Was it a particular opponent that you had problem with, if at all, or was it just keeping focus and having the kids achieve their potential?
Honestly, the NEC's gotten better and better every year. Adding Masco in this year, they lost to Winchester last year in the Division I North Final. So to add another powerhouse in, Peabody's always strong, Marblehead's always strong, Beverly's always strong. So our league definitely had some strength, but I don't know. I mean, in terms of challenges, we were just focused on making sure that we could stay in our gym as long as we could.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the biggest challenge for us is obviously the biggest challenge everybody's trying to navigate right now, being hopefully in the tail end of this pandemic.
Well, your record is outstanding. It's incredible, 15-0 this year. But one of the things that jumped off the page when I was reading the Salem News story by who wrote this one? Nick Giannino. Your team lost only six sets all year long. That's kind of amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And, I mean, in terms of stats, you can definitely look at what our seniors did this year. But our underclassmen definitely came together and pushed hard. And some of those sets were underclassmen-led against some of the stronger teams in the league that out of those six sets, three we lost either 25-23 or an extra point by two.
Okay. So that means those kids got some valuable experience as well.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
That's fantastic. All right, let's go talk about your seniors now. Brag about those kids.
Yeah, that's definitely an easy task. So we have four this year, all going on to do great things. So Shayla Saad, she was a senior middle blocker this year. She is going to Clemson next year. Megan Murphy, senior captain, also plays middle blocker. She's chosen not to play next year because she was accepted into the honors nursing program at UNH.
Wow.
Our other two seniors, we have Lily Eldridge, senior captain setter. She will be playing at WPI. academic excellence is an understatement.
Yeah.
And then our fourth senior this year, Carly Goodhue. She was a member of the All-State team last year as a junior. She'll be playing Division II volleyball at Assumption next year.
I'm just shaking my head at the qualifications of these kids as student-athletes. And, Coach, you must be extremely proud of this team because an extraordinary season, extraordinary circumstances, and I've said this to every single coach, you've had to do extra stuff, as have the kids, to keep everybody safe. But then to be competitive and then go out and just, win as you did, it's got to say something about being an extra special season.
Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, we talk a lot about culture in our program and maintaining culture, and especially led by these seniors. I mean, this is my biggest concern this year is without a state tournament, without varsity having as much interaction as they normally do with our JV program, does that culture maintain and how does that work? And especially the upperclassmen this year. I can't say enough about what they did to make sure that we're set up for success for the rest of this program.
I'm going to post the article with all the statistics, the amazing records that the Danvers Falcons volleyball team has at the moment. But I want to ask you, Coach, maybe as a final question, what is your most your proudest achievement this year, either in terms of your viewpoint as a coach or how you look at the kids? Because in a season of outstanding achievement, there's got to be something you're going to look back and say, okay, this was really special because.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much this year. I mean, this senior class was definitely something special. They've gone 78-7 in their 4 years of the program.
Okay.
But I think their senior year to go out without having to play a fifth set is definitely something that speaks volumes.
Wow, yeah.
A lot of the teams that we've played have a lot of strength, and they definitely had enough skill set to come out and beat us this year. And our kids didn't let them get close. And not going to a fifth set in volleyball is it's pretty remarkable to do that in a full season.
Well, yeah. I just read that, and my jaw just dropped. I hadn't seen that before. That's incredible. Coach, we're going to talk in the fall, and I don't want to rush summer away, but it's going to be very close when we'll be doing this again. And at that point, I want to, we'll be talking about some of the kids who are coming back, but it looks like you have a strong nucleus returning.
Yeah, we've got obviously graduating four this year, but the majority of the girls will be back. They all got a lot of playing time this year, being in this unique season that we're in. And they're definitely ready. Their foot's already on the gas. They're already getting themselves prepared for summer workouts, and they're definitely geared up and ready to go to keep this tradition rolling.
Wow, this is just amazing, George. Anything else you want to mention about the program or about this year's team?
No, I mean, you've pretty much kind of covered it all at this point. They're definitely a special group, but we're excited to see what comes next.
Well, you must be proud of them, and it's fantastic, the stuff that you've done. And congratulations. I know you're going to be following them, and they're going to be looking back on this with great memories. So we'll talk in the fall. In the meantime, stay safe.
Great. I appreciate it, Rick.
Thank you, Coach. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is Danvers High School volleyball coach George Lavasser with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.